The Committee for Brisbane acknowledges the original custodians of the land upon which this podcast is being produced, the Turrbal and Yuggera people, and pays respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Hello, I'm Alan Patching from Bond University and I'm the Chair of the Connectivity Subcommittee for the Committee for Brisbane. And this is the fifth in our podcast series regarding connectivity. And with me today, I have Matt McShane. Matt McShane is an industrial designer who works at Griffith University and also is involved in research at Griffith University. Not that I'm suggesting for any researchers who might be listening that it is completely different from work. Nothing could be further from the truth. Now, Matt's a very interesting person, and he'll be the last speaker in this series because since he was 18 years old, he's been confined to a wheelchair. And he's learnt to deal with that relatively well. But because he had time moving around normally without a wheelchair for 18 years of his life, he's the perfect person to be able to give an opinion on the change and the difference between the two in particular scenarios. So we're going to look at some of the points made by our previous speakers, and we're going to ask Matt to give his comments on that from the perspective of a person living with a disability. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
You're most welcome. Now, you started off when we were having a little chat prior to this with a very interesting comment that you don't think of yourself as an advocate, more that you take a balanced view on what life's dealt up from you. Now, that would be an interesting perspective to understand more for our listeners. So would you like to develop that concept for us?
Yeah, I think I can only really talk on my experiences of things I've experienced with my disability and how that's affected me and how I've seen the world through that. I think naturally I've also sort of gone towards the perspective of everyone's different and different situations, so having a one-sided view isn't always the best option.
So when you say a one-sided view, are you referring to the context of someone who has a disability and sees and experiences great negativity out of it, perhaps more so than you might?
Yeah, I think my view is from an active wheelchair user, and even within the small scope of wheelchair users, there's still different cohorts that might use power chairs or electric chairs. So my view might not be the same as theirs. So it's important to sort of take a step back sometimes and sort of see the bigger picture.
Speaking of the bigger picture, let's start with an overall perception that you might have of Brisbane. So we're here to talk about improving connectivity, and in particular for this series, the first and last mile connectivity. But I'm just wondering, what's your thoughts of Brisbane as a city to get around as a person with a disability? Just the CBD to start with, and then maybe some of the suburbs.
Yeah, it definitely has its challenges. It's a city built around a winding river and lots of hills in between. So naturally, it doesn't work very good with someone with a physical disability.
What are the major problems? Is it the hills, or are there other problems as well for someone with a disability?
Personally, I think the hills are a big issue. A lot of the places most people would like to go to get there, there's a few hills involved or issues like that that you might face.
How does a person with a disability deal with that? Is it just kind of route planning, that you take a longer route to avoid hills? Is that part of it?
Yeah, and practice. There's different ways to get to places. You have to be creative and find a different route sometimes, or potentially, unfortunately, have to maybe change your plans or go to somewhere else.
Mm. So if we look at the podcast series and what's been said, we're looking at the sort of connectivity around the city and also travelling longer distances between nearby cities or across the city by public transport, and how that can be improved. So again, before we go into some of the suggestions made by other speakers in the series, what's your view of the public transport system, say, around Brisbane? I know you live on the Gold Coast now. Around the Gold Coast, travelling between the two, when you do travel by public transport. How do you find that as a person having to travel with a disability?
I think the train system's pretty good. They've got a good system in place of ramps at stations that don't have level transit from the train to the platform. It's not the perfect situation, but they're slowly improving stations that have that different level access. Buses are okay. They've got their issues. It's often not the safest mode of transport for someone with a disability to get around on buses.
And that's because of the getting on the bus and alighting more than anything else?
I think once you're on the bus, sometimes being restrained or the best way to be restrained on the bus can be a little unsafe for some people. And the buses aren't the most stable transport to sort of sit on in a chair. That they manoeuvre pretty good around the city. So, yeah.
So I'm inferring from what you said that your preferred mode of transport, public transport, would be train. Is that correct?
Yeah, I much prefer train. And then if I get somewhere, I'd get an Uber,
right,
generally.
Okay. So let's now take it from that background, talking about the city the way it is, from the perspective of someone living with a disability, to some of the suggestions that have been made by our other podcast guests. And Michael Major, in the first in the series, was talking about bringing the principles of neuroarchitecture to the city and outside of where it's traditionally used. And what he was speaking of in particular is taking the principles that are used to design good shopping centres, where people might go in to buy something and want to leave in a hurry, and that's fine. But if they get there, they're also, because of the design of the place, they're open to options, and the options kind of hit them in the face. You know, it's like, wow, this is an interesting shopping centre. I could have a coffee here before I go home, or I could wander around. And other speakers in the series have taken that same principle. But Michael says, let's take those principles outdoors and make options available to people who are strolling around the city, going down a mall, walking through the gardens, going across a bridge. So it's less transactional because there are distractions installed along the way. There is shade along the way. There are points to stop and look at interesting aspects of your environment along the way. To what extent do you think those sort of principles, if they were applied in the Brisbane CBD and the South Bank area in particular, particularly for the Olympics and beyond, how much appeal or benefit would they have for people living with disabilities?
I think that's a really good point. A few things that pop into my mind is being able to sort of see and feel and notice accessible features around the city. Often there's parts of Brisbane that can be very accessible, but maybe hidden, or you don't know about it until you've experienced it. Yeah, there's some very interesting points. There's definitely parts of Brisbane that have good accessibility features but are often hidden, or you don't notice them and you have to search them out, where if things are more open and noticeable and in your face and you can go from point A to point B and notice something along the way that is accessible, and you can go and stop for a coffee or go and do another activity or whatnot. I think the main thing that people with a disability lose out on is sometimes it's the experiences. We have a focus on accessibility in terms of getting into a place or how to get here or there. But when they get there, is the experience accessible? And that's something that's often missing. And I think that can really, adding experiences that are accessible to someone's journey or someone's day in the city or weekend away or journey from work to home, if there's things that people can do that are accessible, I think that's a really positive thing for Brisbane.
So if we were to take, say, Michael's suggestion, one of them would be small art galleries or pieces of art along the way. If those sort of things or a coffee shop were to be installed, then it would be better if they were done either with ramp access at the right grade or on the ground for direct access, but not raising them to avoid, say, local flooding when there's heavy rain, and then leaving it a step, because that becomes a problem not just for people in a wheelchair, but for people, say, on crutches or a walking stick. Having to make a step can be quite an effort. So they're the sort of things you're talking about.
Yeah, I think if everything like that is designed with accessibility needs in mind, everyone benefits, whether it's a mum or dad with a pram or an elderly person that might just have dodgy knees or something like that. Everyone will benefit from those accessibility features that are built in from the start.
Yeah. And you intimated just before we went on air, that point extends to everybody, because everybody effectively will live with a disability relative to when they're young. I thought that was an excellent point. And I think you're referring to as people get older. Would you like to develop that point, that everybody will eventually, relative to their 15-year-old self, if they live any length, they're going to end up with some form of disability?
Yeah, disability is nothing new. It may be looked at a certain way, but everyone will find or experience some form of disability within their life. Often caring for their parents or grandparents, they might sort of see it a little bit, but as nature progresses, people will decline in terms of physical ability, and having these accessibility features in play from the start will benefit everyone eventually.
And I suppose right now is a good time to be looking at it, given that a large portion of the population, namely my generation, the baby boomers, are getting to the point where we're experiencing exactly what you're talking about. Just certain things become more difficult and more problematic with age. Even age itself can open you up to the experience of the problems you're referring to.
Exactly. And you don't want to exclude anyone from experiencing things or getting around the city or any little thing like that.
Well, speaking about experience, what do you think would be good things among the points that Michael raised, such as points where you can stop, shade, things like that? Are there any specific items on that neuroarchitecture thought, the idea of having shade, the idea of having distraction? What sort of things would you like as a person living with a disability, and do you think others would like, that would be different from what an able-bodied person might prefer to change the city and have distractions, or are, in fact, they the same thing?
I would say they're probably very similar, just with slight changes. Just accessibility into some experiences, whether it's a coffee shop or an art gallery or getting to and from a venue of some sort, if that's physically accessible, then that's a huge win. I think the number one ticket item would be bathrooms. Accessible bathrooms can be tricky to find, and hard to know where they are. So that's probably a big one. Shaded areas and seating for people that might need to have a rest, and having an accessible place to do that would be a big one too.
Okay. So if we move beyond the neuroarchitecture benefits, and I think the things you said at the end would be just as much a benefit for anybody as for someone with a disability, like a seat that attracts you to sit and just experience the environment instead of belting across the river, sitting on a street somewhere and watching the boats go by, for example, in a shaded area. So I think that point's well made. It's interesting that we think there's plenty of toilets, but if you don't have a disability, that's taken from the perspective of a toilet that doesn't have accessibility space around it. So it's an interesting point you make there. Is that a major problem around Brisbane at the moment?
Yeah, I think so. Physically, some bathrooms that aren't there or aren't accessible, but also knowing where they are. We do a bad job of either whether it's wayfinding or having apps or information out there that people can look up and know where accessible features are. Most people with a disability generally over-research when they're trying to do something. They've 'cause they don't want to get somewhere and find out it's not accessible. So first thing I do when I want to go out for dinner is I Google Maps it and look to see if it's accessible or not. So I think people with a disability will generally look for information based around what activity they're trying to do or where they're going. And if we don't do a good job of telling that, whether it's accessible or whether it's not accessible, then we're sort of missing it a step that could be done really early in the process, just by providing information about where accessible bathrooms might be.
So that's an excellent positive point to add to the neuroarchitecture recommendations that Michael made, that one, we need toilets. Secondly, we need to tell people where they are. But in particular, we need to make sure they're accessible and that they're easily found either through signage or through an app that no doubt will develop as the city develops that tells the locations for various things. I'm sure there's some of those already, but they need to be improved. That would summarise what you were saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So let's move on now. One of the people that followed Michael was Tessa. She had a similar concept of Michael's idea of a green canopy in the city to moving out to have walking, strolling, wheelchair riding, whatever, accessibility between areas of the suburbs that are already used. And she was referring specifically to parklands. So people go to a park, but they go to the same park and they're stuck in that park, where it would be relatively easy to join these parks up with pathways, better footpaths, more even, with security cameras, security lighting. But in particular, so people could move from one suburb to the other and kind of say, we're going to the next park up the road, so we'll get some exercise and maybe go to a coffee shop there and maybe meet some different people. And we make it attractive for people to want to do that journey. It's not about the destination. It's about the experience of using the greened and better designed access ways between these facilities. How does that appeal to people with a disability, would you think? And what would be the main considerations to get that right?
Well, it sounds great. It sounds like so much fun. That's where life occurs, I think, those little transitions. If it's accessible to everyone, I don't see why anyone wouldn't want to be involved in something like that or change their lifestyle and do those types of things.
But I'm imagining from what you said before that one of the considerations that's probably the most important for people with a disability is grading and evenness of the path as much as, say, lighting and shade.
Yeah, and it is tricky in Brisbane, but if there's a way that it can be done where there's not hills up and down and if the footpaths are well put together without steep curb ramps and e-scooters everywhere, it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, the control of the e-scooter is another thing altogether because they're a great way to get around. But I don't think too many people have a good understanding of what 10 kilometres an hour is when they're riding e-scooters around the city. Let's move on to the importance of shade. Now, I would imagine that that's the same for everybody, but given that people with a disability are likely to move slowly, maybe not those in wheelchairs, but people with other disabilities on walking sticks and frames, etc., then shade becomes even more of paramount importance because of the longer time in the sun. Is that something that designers should be thinking about?
Yeah, I think so. The shade's very important for lots of people with disabilities. Some disabilities can't regulate their heat and body temperature properly, so it's important to stay cool. And yeah, you are right. Like, the journey might take a little bit longer for someone with a physical disability, so shade would be a very effective way to attract them towards pushing or getting around, however.
Is it your belief? I used to work with a guy in the State Works Department many years ago, with a guy called Rod Warmington, who was in a wheelchair as a result of a car accident. He was an architect, and he used to always quote the Department of Veterans Affairs in America, and they always used to say, we've got to have disabled-friendly, accessible buildings. And they'd fly him over from Australia as an architect in a wheelchair so that if he couldn't get to everywhere in that building and every toilet and everything, then the building didn't get its certificate of completion. That may be seen as taking a bit far, but keep in mind that most of the people who use that facility were, in fact, disabled. What's your thoughts about that? Should people designing have more access, or should they be talking more to people with the disabilities, or do you think there's enough data out there for that these days?
I think definitely they need to have lived experience incorporated in that process. Any new facility, or definitely every public facility, should have high accessibility requirements. And to do it right, you need lived experience through that process. To get that viewpoint is just something crucial, where little things can definitely get missed if it's not there.
Right. Now, lived experience gives us a nice segue into the last area I wanted to get some thoughts from you on, and that's the public transport system. And let's deal specifically with trains. David Freer is a native of Birmingham in England, and he saw that city transform. And in the podcast we did with him, he spoke about many of the things we could pretty much lift and bring over here and apply to Brisbane. So one of the things he was speaking about, which took me by surprise, because I've always thought, you know, I'd be using the Gold Coast train to go to the university campus down there far more often if it was a faster train. He said that's not necessarily the best solution, because it takes a long time to build a dedicated track and all this sort of stuff. He said the better solution would be to do what the Birmingham crowd, they've got a fast train now, but before they had that, they did up the carriages so everybody had a comfortable seat, a table in front of them, they could work on their computers, full functional and effective Wi-Fi, minimal number of announcements telling you you're on express that only stops at 5 stops along the way, and all this sort of stuff that we get going to the Gold Coast and back. But in particular, he could get on his app the night before or the morning he travelled, tell him what train he's going on, and pick his seat, order his breakfast, tell him what time he wanted it, going from Birmingham to London. And he didn't care, and nor did anybody else on the train, to the best of his knowledge, how long the journey was, long as you could do something productive on the journey. Do you think it's more important to look at factors like that for public transport, or do you think we should be looking and emphasising the need for faster public transport between cities?
I don't necessarily think the speed or the timing of the train is important. I think ability to get on and off the train for someone with a disability would be paramount. And then when on the train, how accessible it is, how it feels. Like currently, most trains I have to sit at an angle compared to most other punters, where they'd be facing front or back, where I have to sit side on, because that's where the accessible seats are, and I'm in the section where everyone stands. So if it's a crowded train, I'm sitting up with my back against the wall and a bunch of punters standing on their way to work or home. So those kind of things do play a big role, I think.
But that sounds like, well, two things. One, what David was suggesting would fix that, because you'd have an area with a table and accessible space. But it raises another question, that even if we didn't have that, it seems like a simple fix. You just need to have a guardrail, that maybe two, one that the standing passengers can lean against and another one 30 centimetres behind it, so they don't have their backside in your face sort of thing when they're leaning. And then you can go around that into your seating space or wherever you position your wheelchair. That sounds like a solution and a very simple one. Do you think that there's not enough focus on the need for these simple solutions?
Yeah, I think so. There's obviously constraints with transport and trains and whatnot, but they're the little details that I think can be missed in the design process when lived experience isn't incorporated. There's definitely solutions for everything. It's just how if we're happy with the status quo, or we want to go meet requirements, or do we want to go above and beyond and really create something better than what we can do? And often we don't quite go for a gold. We just sort of settle for what's standard or a little bit better. But we sell ourselves short, I think.
So if we were to take your principle that if we design well for people with a disability, we design well for the entire population, but we also future-proof for people of a certain age now as they deteriorate physically as they get older, then that would suggest that a complete change in design thinking, because at the moment design thinking is about you produce for the general member of the public, a healthy person, and then you make allowances for the others. But you're saying less design for the fact that everybody could deteriorate physically, and you'll have a better solution for everybody up front. Now, if you took that to the 100% level, it would probably become cost prohibitive. But somewhere between those two things is a happy medium. How do we reach that? Is it about having design forums and having people with a disability talk at design conferences? How do we go about making our city one of the most disabled person-friendly cities in the world, notwithstanding its hills, between now and the Olympics, if that was a goal?
Yeah, I think talking with people that use the city that have a disability from a empathy perspective, not a sympathy side, it's understanding how they navigate the city and how they use it and how they would like to use it. And bringing them along the ride from the idea phase through development and then closing the loop within a design phase. I think those points are crucial, and not from a tokenistic perspective. It's a genuine, authentic wanting to create a better city for everyone. And that means getting everyone's input and everyone's perspective.
When you say tokenistic, do you think some of the work that's been done to date is a little too tokenistic in regard to looking after the needs of people with a disability in the transport space?
Yeah, I think so. It's box ticking or retrofitting because of maybe legislation and things like that. But I think if it has been tokenistic in the past and probably still is, but I think genuinely intentions are probably pretty good. They might just do it the wrong way.
Right. Again, because they haven't consulted those with the need.
Yep.
Let's put you in the position of Brisbane's chief landscape planning and architectural services. And because of your involvement in this theoretical position, a miracle happens tomorrow. And Brisbane becomes known as the best city between now and the Olympics because of the miracle that happened, this design solution. What are the 3 to 4 key things that come out of it that makes it, the city get that reputation as being one of the best in the world for people with a disability to live in within, say, the coming 8 to 10 years?
Well, I think just navigating the city is easy. You understand the system within getting around the city. It can be confusing. So understanding how to get from point A to point B through 4 or 5 different ways is important. Paths and ramps and all of that stuff where often at the moment you might go a way that you think is accessible and you run into a set of stairs and you've got to go the other way. So I think just accessibility features to get around the city, paths, footpaths, ramp access to shops and things like that. An easy to use public transport would be fantastic. Something that is convenient and every bus or tram or metro, you don't fear that you might not be able to get on it. That's a very tough question, Alan.
That's a pretty good answer nonetheless. So let's just go to our final question. You mentioned before buses, and I got the impression you weren't overly endeared with bus transport. So what has to happen for bus transport to be better? Because trains, you seem to think they're within striking distance with some of the changes that David Freer put forward. But the bus is more difficult. How does that get fixed, or can it be fixed from the perspective of a person with a disability?
Yeah, I think a few issues is they're on a very tight schedule. So the drivers and the transport department aren't a time constraint because everyone's in a rush. So when they have to pull over and then manually put down the ramp and then put you in your little area, takes a little bit of time, and often it feels like we are being a burden on the bus system at both ends, when we're getting on and when we're getting off. It's also very, it can feel unsafe getting around with hills and corners, and those buses turn pretty quick, and if you're not holding on, it can feel pretty dangerous, like a bit of a ride.
Like wheelchair rugby on a bus.
Exactly, yeah. I think these things can be fixed. A bit of awareness about what it actually is like for someone with an accessibility needs to get on and off a bus, and as we're trying to get on, get off, maybe the 30 people trying to get on can wait a minute, or the bus drivers can have a bit more patience and understand it might take 2 minutes out of their tight schedule to sort of make it a more comfortable experience.
It's such a simple but such an obvious solution. And the interesting thing is, it's not just about the time for the other people, because I very much doubt they'd worry too much. It's the thought, and it never crossed my mind before, the mere fact that you have a difficulty and you have to get a special bit of service and someone has to put the ramp, say, for a train or whatever they do for a bus, that the bottom line output of that is that there's a person, maybe only one person with a disability, whose experience of that travel is really bad because they felt they'd been a burden on other people unnecessarily, but that's the way they felt. And that could affect their entire evening or their entire day and their productivity and their enjoyment of life. So that's something I think every listener, you know, would want to focus on and be part of the solution to that. So I should finish and say, are there any questions you've got of us, you know, the committee? I know you're a member of our committee now. We're really pleased to have you on board. But any questions on what we're doing or other things we should be asking you that I omitted by mistake?
No, I think we spoke about it, incorporating lived experience through the process. It's just as important of this discussion phase as it is implementation and design phase. So keeping that perspective, broad perspective of everyone that's going to be using our city involved in this process is very healthy.
Thank you very much. Matt McShane, I'd like to thank you on behalf of the Committee for Brisbane and every listener to this podcast, for not only your very even and sensible attitude to the problems that you face, but also for putting lived experience in a way that we can understand it despite the fact we live a completely different experience. That's a special skill, and for that skill, we thank you very much.
Cool. Thanks for having me.